Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward. Don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome, everyone, to the SI Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Traina. Thank you for listening. On this week's show, we have a very interesting interview with Timothy Burke, who's also known as Bubba Prague on Twitter. If you're on Twitter, you know who he is. There's no way you don't. So here's the three reasons or the three storylines with Tim that you may have known about, find interesting. First and foremost, he, along with Jack Dickey, at the time were at Deadspin. They broke the story about the Manti Te'o girlfriend hoax story. There's a great new two-part series on Netflix about it, and he's a big part of it. So I wanted to have him on to talk about the documentary on Netflix and him breaking that story and everything that went into that. He also recently, Tim recently had a little Twitter thing with Sean Hannity where he put together a spliced video about raids, and Hannity was very unhappy, and that became a thing. And Tim, a.k.a. Bubba Prague on Twitter, was really the first person who had the raw footage of the Will Smith slap of Chris Rock, where you heard Will Smith curse out Chris Rock. And it wasn't the ABC footage that was censored. He had the uncensored. So we get into how he does all this with video and his setup. It's really interesting and fascinating. So that's our main interview. And then we have Train of Thoughts with Sal Licata following that, where I go on another rant about streaming. And we talk about the NFL versus NBA Christmas Day situation, a couple of other things. Before we get to those two parts of the podcast, let me just remind you, last week, Linda Cohn from ESPN was on the podcast along with Brian Gerwertz from the WWE, not currently, but he was the head writer there from 1999 to 2012. So very interesting stuff there if you're a wrestling fan. 2 weeks ago, we celebrated our 400th episode. Also spoke to Rolling Stone's Alan Sepinwall about what to watch on television this summer. John Oran 3 weeks ago about the latest sports media news. And Dave Meltzer on Vince McMahon's retirement. Peter Schrager was on the pod recently as well. So check those all out in the archives and subscribe. Leave a review. Definitely 100% reading Apple reviews next week. So leave one if you want to hear it and ask a question, whatever you want to do in the Apple review section. All right, let's get to this week's show. Timothy Burke, followed by Train of Thoughts with Sal Licata, right here on the SI Media Podcast. All right, joining me now, if you're on Twitter, you have seen him come into your feed, whether you follow him or not, on a very regular basis. He's a former reporter for Deadspin, big part of the Manti Te'o documentary, currently in a feud with Sean Hannity, someone I think is a fascinating online presence. Tim Burke, also known as Bubba Prague on Twitter. Tim, how are you?
Hey, Jimmy, I'm having a great day. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. And I watched the Manti Te'o We're taping on Wednesday. I watched it on Tuesday. You're a big part of it. I want to get into it. Before we get into Manti Te'o, a couple of other things. Let me start with the Hannity thing because it's current and it's amusing. You, for anyone not who doesn't know what's going on here, last week, Tim spliced together a video of Hannity and one of the Trump people ranting and raving about the FBI raid and spliced in Ron DeSantis sort of supporting the raid. And it was an old clip of DeSantis supporting an old raid, not the one with Trump. And a lot of people thought it was real. And Hannity tweeted it, which, again, talk about just completely dumb, tweeting something you don't want people to see, just right out of the playbook of not knowing what you're doing. And it became a thing. So just tell me what this whole experience has been like for you. What's the backlash from the crazy MAGAs? Did Fox News ask you to take it down? What's been the fallout from the very amusing video?
Well, you know, if you're unfamiliar with the video, then you're following the right people on Twitter. I would say that you have really, you know, self-regulated your little circle of the internet, if you're unfamiliar with it. And I would applaud anybody for doing that. You know, it's interesting because I've been making videos that sort of point out hypocrisy, or to be, I guess, a little more judicious, inconsistencies in politicians' statements for a really long time. Even before I was, you know, on Twitter, even that Twitter existed. It's just sort of always been a thing. And look, it's a total ripoff from Jon Stewart and The Daily Show, who, you know, certainly, I think, made that an art form. And I just sort of always kind of been attuned to remembering when politicians say certain things or have certain moments. And this isn't even the first time that I've sort of made a mashup like this. I made several, I think, when I worked for the Daily Beast involving like Tucker Carlson. And it's just sort of a thing that I've kind of always done. And, you know, in this instance, I sort of had an idea. And I think, you know, I do a lot of just really silly things on the internet. And again, this is sort of the thing that I've kind of always done. And I generally, if I get an idea, I limit myself to executing it in 15 minutes. I've got enough other things going on in my life than to be wasting time on this sort of thing. And if it's not funny or interesting or making a point in 15 minutes, then I toss it and I delete the project and I move on. So in this case, you know, I spent, you know, a quarter of an hour, you know, the clip with Hannity was already out there on Twitter. And then I knew that the Ron DeSantis was defending a raid that he had ordered on a critic of his here in Florida regarding COVID statistics back in 2020. And so I pulled up the video of that and I spliced it together. And I made, you know, no effort toward trying to pass it off as being real. And I, to this day, don't understand how anybody could see that it was real. I mean, first of all, it's night where Sean Hannity is and it's daytime where Ron DeSantis is, which, you know, how could that be? The same six frames of Sean Hannity loop over and over for 90 seconds. It's a fairly obvious, you know, mashup. And so for whatever reason, a lot of people felt it necessary to share it as if it were real. And I 15 minutes or less right after I had tweeted it, you know, somebody had tweeted back at me, you know, oh, this is fake. And I quote tweeted it in the immediate tweet next to the video saying, yeah, I know, I made it. And even then it apparently wasn't enough to settle down the people who seemed outraged by the fact that I had made this mashup. And, you know, I've kind of been at war with Ron DeSantis's office for a long time. And when one thing his spokesperson really likes to do is to, you know, attack me, even though she has me blocked on Twitter, which, you know, for really, I think in the general purpose of talking about, you know, who you disagree with, one of the most cowardly things that you can do is block somebody and then criticize them because they have no way of seeing what you're saying about them and they have no way of responding to it. And I think that that's, you know, I think that the idea of discourse commands that you be able to respond to your critics. I think that that's just a sort of a basic thing we understand in a democracy, right? So they really, really, you know, got upset about this. And then, you know, Hannity tweets it out and says, this is fake, don't share this. which of course, you know, that's the Streisand effect, right? He just shared, you know, I have 110,000 followers or something. He's got millions and he just decided to share this thing out there. And the point was, of course, not to fool anybody. The point was to highlight that, you know, was the raid, quote unquote, raid on Mar-a-Lago a raid or not? And you have, you know, Hannity and Lara Trump saying, oh, this was a raid. Of course, it was a raid. And then you have Ron DeSantis, who was defending his raid, saying it wasn't a raid. Right. It's just a funny contradiction. And so instead of, you know, them trying to disprove this fake video, it ended up just highlighting the, you know, inconsistencies in that sort of rhetoric. And the really weird thing to me, Jimmy, is that if say someone did think it were real, they thought the video were real and that it was an actual appearance of Ron DeSantis on Sean Hannity defending the FBI seizing documents from Mar-a-Lago. If you thought it were real, the only rational response to seeing that would be to conclude that Ron DeSantis were a rational person, that he was the sane voice in this conversation. And yet Ron DeSantis's people are all up in arms about this. They're very upset about a video that, if it were perceived to be true, paints him in a good light. And that tells me a lot about the state of politics today.
All right. So full disclosure here. I call people out all the time when they do dumb things. I did think it was real for a split second. Let me defend myself. It was one of those things where it popped into my feed. I watched it. And I think, so what went through my head was, this is DeSantis setting himself up versus Trump in 2 years. And I was a little confused about, because the way Hannity fought back, I was like, oh, this, you know, because Hannity's obviously Team Trump. And I texted it to two people, one you know, who we'll talk about, Jack Dickey. And all I wrote was, this is delicious. And I will say, I then watched it again immediately. And then wrote back, it's fake. I needed a second viewing because I think I got so excited. I got caught up in the excitement that I wanted it to be real. And I thought this was DeSantis sort of, because everyone thinks it's going to be DeSantis versus Trump. And you're looking for that infighting that we love. So everything you say is true. And I am an idiot, but I don't want to sit here and act like I didn't get fooled. I got fooled. But I do want to ask you this. When you're putting together that video, now you mentioned one is at night, one is at, you know, DeSantis, the sun's out. But I felt like you could not have put that together, spliced it, mashed it up any better. I mean, it worked perfectly. When you're putting that together, are you like, wow, it's amazing how this is just so seamless?
Well, to sort of give you some background on that specific approach of mashing together conversations or interviews, you know, I grew up watching Weird Al Yankovic do these fake interviews, where he would take actual interviews done with musical artists and then insert himself asking different questions, right? And so I, in high school, started making my own versions of those. And in college, I, you know, got an A in a radio production class for a specific sort of version of that I did, right? So I have three quarters of my life, I've been thinking about, you know, how you integrate different forms of media together. You know, back in the 90s, we used to call it culture jamming, right? Where you'd mix all these things together. And so I think that that's a sort of a big part of my upbringing and the way that I relate to media and combining those things. So it's sort of, it does kind of come naturally to me. And upon listening to it, I did realize, and I'll say this, that while I can't quite understand how somebody could watch it and think it were real, if you were a sightless person and you just listened to it, especially if you listened to it on a phone where the fidelity, you wouldn't notice that, like, Ron DeSantis is very clearly not, like, his voice is coming through a microphone PA system and not through a TV microphone, where that fidelity wouldn't be clear. You very well could conclude that it might have been a real conversation.
Right.
But again, you know, I attached a tweet immediately following it to clarify that it was not real. And there are subsequent many, many, many tweets after it where I clarify, hey, this is not real. So the idea that has been really pushed by the Republican Party of Florida and DeSantis's office and Sean Hannity, that I was somehow trying to trick people. Right. Well, if you're trying to push disinformation, you don't immediately identify it as something that was you know, fabricated and right. and made up for that purpose, right?
Right.
That's sort of the difference there. Right. So,
has the backlash gotten scary at all? Because I know, you know, things could get sort of dangerous.
Well, you know, I went through this a couple of years ago. I tweeted a video of the actor Vince Vaughn shaking hands with Donald Trump at the national championship game, and I saw it as a video of people who were singing along to Sweet Caroline and badly, right? Like out of sync and everything, because right. that's what was happening in the background. And I tweeted it out with something like, I'm sorry that, you know, I have to show you this. And it was read as this, you know, like attack on Vince Vaughn or something. And like Don Trump Jr. tweeted it out with some nasty thing about me. And I got like death threats for that. So, you know, obviously, you work at Gawker for 8 years. You get used to people yeah. saying nasty things about you. Yeah. And so, you know, in this instance, it's just, you know, most of the people, you know, trying to, you know, dunk on, oh, I can tell that this is a fake video, are also at the same time sharing it, which is getting the key message out, the inconsistencies in how we describe whether something is a raid or not, which is the point of the video.
Right.
And so it connects it with more people, which is sort of the point. And if you're going to do my work for me in the course of criticizing me, I will happily take right. that criticism.
Did you get people accusing you of working with like the Biden administration? I bet you got a lot of that.
Oh yeah. There's all kinds right. of that, you know, you know, Democrats have to fabricate this thing. And it's like, right. no, I'm not, you know, and it is, look, Jimmy, it's a little more sensitive to me right now because my wife is a city of Tampa, city councilwoman. So, the relationship that I have with politics in the state in particular now is a little different than it was just a few months ago. And, you know, I'm not trying to cause, you know, any kind of conflict with anybody in this. But as you know, things are very, very complicated in the state of Florida right now. You know, the governor just removed our state attorney, and our state right. attorney also happens to have been a high school classmate of my wife. So, you know, there's a lot going on there. And so it's in my best interest to not create this sort of drama. And I certainly was not trying to create any gotcha. Of this sort of drama. I was trying to make an interesting video to prove a point, and it really kind of it blew up way out of my control.
What has been for people who don't know, if you're on Twitter, Tim, who's Bubba Prague on Twitter, has come into your feed numerous times with viral videos. Do you have, what are some viral, non-politics, let's go to sports. What have been some of your biggest videos, just for my own curiosity, that have gone crazy on Twitter?
A lot of them are videos where I've taken, I think, really interesting sports moments and used a couple different approaches, algorithms, programs I've written to make them like super slow-mo. I have two different videos of Simone Biles doing floor exercise that are in extreme slow motion. And that's something I started doing again, like way before I was at Deadspin. It was this just, again, making something goofy. Let's take this sports moment, slow it down to an extreme degree, and set it to, you know, indie pop music from my wife's music collection. Mm-hmm. And it is like, this is just totally like jarring. And it's just weird. And it's the thing that I've just been doing for a really long time. And that's sort of in the line of that. But in NBC, the instance of those things, they go very popular.
And NBC in the Olympics, they didn't take that down because I thought they take everything. They send out the what are they called? DMCAs or whatever.
Right. In this instance and in a lot of those instances, because I have transformed the video so much, it's protected under fair use.
There you go.
And in the occasion that, you know, I do get a takedown, and I get a number of takedowns, I post a lot of sports highlights and things.
Right.
I always, you know, send a counter notice, and I have, you know, I don't want to jinx myself. I have a wood table, so I'll knock on it. But, you know, I have yet to not prevail in any of those counterclaims.
Good job there. I remember the one time I got one on Twitter was I posted the last scene ever from The Sopranos in Halston's. And I think the reason I got it is it's not because of The Sopranos. It's Don't Stop Believing.
Right, right,
Journey is I guess you're not allowed to post that anywhere. I want to get into the Manti Te'o doc. One of the things that blew me away in the Manti Te'o doc on Netflix, it's called Untold, The Girlfriend That Never Was. Tim's a big part of it. It was Tim and Jack Dickey at Deadspin who broke the story that the girlfriend never existed. But one of the things that blew me away, I texted Jack when I watched it and I said, there should be a Netflix doc on Tim Burke, because I was blown away. Was the setup we see in the doc your own house and your own setup?
Yeah. So it's sort of interesting because when we did that story back in 2013, I lived in St. Petersburg, just across the bay. And it was in I was working out of a bedroom, and it was a much more cramped space. It was a bad place. And we live in Tampa now, where I actually have a whole office to myself. And so it's a much bigger space. So, you know, that is where I work. That's where I am right now. What you see in the film is my general working position. And that's what I do. The configuration changes depending on particularly which clients I'm serving and what purpose I'm doing. If it's for sports clients where I have to have, you know, all the NFL games up, or if it's for news or politics clients where we're doing different things like that. But for the most part, what you see in the film is exactly what my office looked like and where I was working as of when we filmed it in April last year.
Okay, so I'm going to pull a screen grab and I'll put it online when I post this of what the setup looks like, because it's amazing. But for the listeners who haven't seen the doc or won't watch, can you tell us how many screens, what you have going? Give us a little synopsis.
I got a count here. Let's see. So yeah. We have 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29. There are 29 that I can see from where I am right now. There's a few behind me.
29 screens. Yeah.
There's also about four. Don't tell my wife this. I've got about four other screens that are in various stages of repair.
Now, are these all like, do you use all streaming services to watch and pull things? Is it, do you have TVs? Do you have cable? Are there computer monitors? What's, you don't have to give me every, I mean, I'm sure it's very detailed, but give me the overall gist of what your setup is.
Well, because I live in Florida and it rains and storms here every day, I have to have something other than DirecTV. DirecTV is what I rely on most of the time, but when it storms, I have to have a backup. And so I do also have a cable television subscription. And then there are a number of these are set up with streaming services. I basically have all of them, right? Because in order to cover everything in sports, you have to have Peacock, you have to have Apple TV, you gotta have all this stuff, right? Yep. And then, you know, there's a whole lot of these screens now that are attached to essentially like homemade hardware devices that are specifically that I've programmed specifically to display certain video feeds, whether they're news feeds, whether they're local TV feeds, or they're sports feeds or satellite feeds, for again the purposes of some of my clients and the things that they need me to be on the lookout for, or things that are in development for clients where I have a client who specifically needs something that rotates through all of these certain TV markets that they cover. And so, you know, we built something that way, and it shows, you know, like I've got New York here and it's got 25. I've got 25 different video feeds from New York City, and they're updating constantly, you know, every minute. So that's a lot of it, because there's parts of my job where I'm supposed to be able to identify when news is happening. And there's parts of my job where I know that, for example, tonight there's a Houston Dash soccer match that I have to cover. It's on CBS Sports Network. So I have to make sure that the DirecTV tuners are going to record the CBS Sports Network. And then I also have to have the backup in case it rains tonight. So that's, you know, it's juggling a lot of things in here. And I'll also say there's 29 some screens in here, but only whatever 10 of them are on right now. Okay. I'm not wasting electricity to display things that I don't need to be paying attention to. But come that first full Saturday of college football season, most of them are going to be on because right. there's just a lot of things that I have to be on top of for them.
So thank you for reminding me of a good decision I made, which was getting rid of DirecTV a few years ago, going to Fios, because I don't miss those days where one drop comes and the TV's out. You've mentioned a few times here clients, and you mentioned you have to do something for your job. For the what is your job? What do you do?
Well, Jimmy, it's really funny because just a couple months ago, my wife and I, we were actually on the neighborhood home tour. We're very involved in our neighborhood, and that's how she ended up on city council. But right before she was named to city council, we were on the home tour. And so I had about 500 people come through this office. And they came through and they looked at this setup in here. And it's not just the screens. It's that, you know, there's a giant server rack with miles of wiring and cables going through it. There's all of the extra cables and backup stuff hanging on the walls. There's just a lot going on in here. And everybody comes in and asks that question. They say, what do you do? And it's a very difficult question to answer because I cover a really wide array of tasks that people come to me and ask to do. And I think maybe the best example of what I do is to go back to the Academy Awards when, you know, I was the one who sourced and posted the uncensored video of the interaction between Chris Rock and Will Smith, right?
Right. Right.
I know where to find these things and I get them to where they need to go. And so sometimes that means that, you know, I have I have a client who I was working with for things like the NCAA tournament and the Final Four to make social content based on video highlights and things like that. Okay.
Right.
You know, I have a client who works in the technology realm where they do things involving advertising in sporting events. And so I capture an incredible amount of video for them. Sometimes my clients are actually the leagues themselves because I'm able to return to them better quality video of their broadcasts than they are even able to get within themselves. Right.
Wow.
You know, and then, you know, I work with a lot of startups, particularly news and politics startups, to help them access the video that they need to do their reporting, to do their analysis and research. I set up, I have a startup that I'm working with in the Midwest right now. That's a news startup, and I'm helping connect them to how they can monitor all of the local news happening in the region that they're covering. So it's a really wide array. Yeah. If it were up to me, it would be more focused in sports than news and politics. I think that my time at the Daily Beast sort of really convinced me that spending all day long watching things like Fox News or even if you're watching MSNBC and just
right.
saturating yourself in politics is, I think, really unhealthy.
100%. I couldn't agree with you more. This is a dumb question, but you said you have 29 screens. You got 10 going now, college football. What is your eyesight like? Do you go to the eye doctor and he's like, give it? Because I know my eye doctor and I just stare at one screen all day. Is like, take the breaks, stare, 100 feet into the distance every 10 minutes, do this. I can't imagine what your eyes must be like at the end of the day.
But this is the thing is that most people stare at one screen all day.
Right.
I'm looking around all the time.
So that's better.
So my focus distance is changing just from like the screen to my left to the screen in the middle, let alone like the 4K screen that I have 6 feet back that way. Then there's these screens up here. There's ones over here. So it's always changing. And one of the things that I sort of fell into this is, I kind of bombed out of my PhD dissertation because I couldn't focus. And I've never had really, I ADHD, whatever. Right. I'm from out in the country. It was never diagnosed. They didn't do that back then. Sure. But it was pretty obvious that I just didn't have the focus necessary to be able to complete something like that. And as it turns out, that sort of lack of attention is an advantage, right? Yeah. It's a benefit when it comes to trying to follow a whole lot of things at once. And I sort of picked up on this, I think, when I worked in radio when I was in high school, where If you've ever worked in radio, there's sometimes you have to listen to and attend to multiple things at once, especially you're queuing up a record. You might have a remote that you have to go to that you're waiting for. You're waiting for, you know, the ad break to finish. There's a lot going on. And I found that I was actually really good at that. And so this sort of kind of harkens back, I think, to the idea of juggling a lot of different media sources at once that I first started doing when I was 13 years old in my town radio station.
Right. Wild. I promise we'll get to Tao, but since you brought it up, let's just do it just for a minute. So the Will Smith, Chris Rock incident. So I remember Will Smith slaps Chris Rock at the Oscars. The video's on Twitter, but the ABC feed, which we all saw here in the United States, cuts away. And a lot of it is a blank screen. And then they definitely didn't have the Will Smith shouting out, "Keep my wife's name out your fucking mouth," and all that stuff. You were the one that had the full video of everything. I don't know if it's a secret, you don't, but like, how do you know where to find that?
So something I've done for a really long time is to seek out sources of international video feeds. I started doing this probably, I think, when I started at Deadspin, maybe a little before that, just because I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting to hear how a sports highlight was called in a different country. And so I have like a really massive database of international video feeds or where to find them on, like, up in the sky with a satellite dish or all of those sorts of things. And really for kind of any big event, I try to pull, you know, from a source like that. In this specific instance, I actually, the feed was very delayed. The one that I had access to that would have been an uncensored version. And I actually relied on a friend of mine who I knew was recording the Japanese feed for me and actually sourced that from that person.
Wild.
But there's, you know, in general, like, it's like the World Series. I try to get a Japanese feed, you know, for the World Series or the All-Star right. game or things like that. Because it's interesting. It's interesting to hear how those things are covered, you know, in other countries. And in this instance, you know, we had a Japanese television feed that was uncensored. And in comparison to, you know, I think soon after I posted mine, somebody who lived in Australia posted what they had seen, which it was unedited in Australia.
Right.
And uncensored in Australia. And, you know, that didn't have a Japanese translation going on. I think the one with the Japanese translation is kind of more interesting. I just think it's unique that, you know, you hear, you know, Will Smith screaming at Chris Rock, and then you hear, you know, an attempt at a Japanese translation. It's funny. It's part of what that moment is to me now.
Right. Absolutely.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a six-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last two decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, finally, the Manti Te'o. It's a two-part series on Netflix. It's called Untold, The Girlfriend That Never Was. Most sports fans, if you're of a certain age, if you remember the sports blogosphere back when it was fun in 2013, Manti Te'o, big story, grandmother and girlfriend die in the same day, big football star at Notre Dame. Deadspin comes out with the story written by Tim and Jack Dickey, who used to work at SI, a friend of mine. Tim and Jack break the story that the girlfriend never existed. It was all a big hoax. And the Netflix series, which I watched, I said this on Twitter. Part one is a good rehashing of all the events. You get the person who catfished Te'o to explain what their process was and how it worked out. Part two, I found way more fascinating because that's when you get Deadspin breaking the story and the fallout, which I found it heartbreaking for Manti Te'o. So my first question to you on it, and you cover this in the doc, but where, you know, Jack explains he got a tip, just an anonymous tip to the random Deadspin inbox, and then you guys put the clues together. Just for my listeners, one, how long from the tip to when you posted that story? And when you posted that story, did you think it would be the biggest thing in the history of Deadspin in your career?
Yeah, well, it's unfortunate that the timeline wasn't necessarily clear in the film.
Right.
Because I think it's interesting. I think, you know, the whole story behind it, Jimmy, where, you know, we got a tip on a Friday afternoon. It was January 12th, 2013. My wife and I were actually, I took the day off because it was our 1 month wedding anniversary. And I was out, you know, picking oranges in a, you know, a grove somewhere out in rural Hillsborough County. And I get a text, I guess, from Dickie saying, hey, you need to check the email. And I checked the email and I said, okay, well, I think we should head home now. And so we got home at 5 o'clock or something, and I immediately started working on it. And I think I worked on it from about five that afternoon until maybe three in the morning when, you know, I had sort of, I think, identified who the person in the photos that were purportedly Lene Kakua was and that she was in fact alive. And so, you know, I picked it back up the next morning where Jack was working on digging into who the person behind the character was. And I was working on trying to get in contact with that living person whose photos were being used to represent Manti Te'o's dead girlfriend. And we had more or less tied the whole thing together by Sunday morning. And by Monday, we had turned in our draft of the piece, and then it published on Wednesday. So the turnaround was 5 days. Right. And a lot of that time was spent on my part, you know, putting together the questions that I had about the story, because I thought that this was and I still do, I think of it as a media criticism story. This is a right. story about how something that didn't happen became the legend of a Heisman Trophy finalist football player and all of the organizations that contributed to telling that myth. And right. so, you know, the document that I had that had all these questions, right, you know, and looking at the discrepancies that, you know, one outlet said that the grandmother died before the girlfriend, and another outlet said the girlfriend died before the grandmother. Hmm. And the distance between the deaths ranged from an hour to a week.
One of those outlets was SI. I had a little anxiety watching it because I said, "Oh, this is, can I have him on now?" But we're all good. But yeah, that was interesting that there was so much discrepancy.
And so, you know, even before we had tied a lot of the loose ends together, that stood out to me as something that was so bizarre in what was a major story in sports. That right. there could be, and it was sitting out there in the open, these wild discrepancies that couldn't be answered. Right. So that was the way that turned around. And I, you know, being somebody who really kind of came up in the college football blogosphere and has always sort of identified myself as a college football person first and foremost, I looked at this as being a story that would appeal to and perhaps impress many of the college football scribes that I admired. And I was really looking for them to, you know, react to it. And as a secondary part, for the fact-checking processes of things like SI or ESPN to be scrutinized as to how something that all of these things that never happened,
right.
How were these things put into print? How are these things put on television? That's what I thought this was a story about. I had a bit of a clue that it might grow a little bigger, you know, when, you know, my wife went to lunch with a friend of hers who doesn't really, you know, follow college football and had mentioned that I was working on the story. And the friend was familiar with the story. She knew about the college football player who dedicated his season to his dead girlfriend.
Right, right.
And then I started saying, oh boy, okay, this might be a little different than I was thinking it might be. Mm-hmm. But I never, Jimmy, imagined this was going to turn into the story that
That's interesting to me. Yeah, you know, it's funny. The SI part fascinated me because I know, especially back in that day, we had staunch fact checkers. So that one, I'm fascinated to know what the process was there, because back then they checked every single word really hardcore. So I would like to know what happened there myself. But number two, I do think, you know, it's interesting to me that you say it's a media story, which it absolutely is. I mean, there's no denying that. But I don't think it's one story. I mean, I think it's multiple stories. You know, Jack, I thought was, I liked what Jack had to say in the doc, where part of the story ended up becoming about sexuality. I remember never thinking it was about Manti Te'o. I mean, he clearly got hoaxed. What's hard is when you watch it in 2022 to remember where everything was in 2013. I could see maybe the day the Deadspin story comes out, no one knows what's going on. And until Te'o ended up speaking in the documentary, it shows he spoke on Katie Couric, which it's fascinating. I was like, that show was on in 2013. It's not around now. But it's interesting to me that you would think it's not. I would have thought when you posted it, you would have, there's so many layers to it. And I think that's what I liked about the Netflix doc, because you did it. I wrote this in my column today. It was fascinating to see how you and Jack got the story. It was fascinating to see how it all came apart in real life for Te'o. And the part that I never really knew about was the effect it had on, I mean, he had anxiety for 3 years, his feet going numb. I thought the doc did a really good job in terms of that. And, but I think it's tough when the story first comes out. I think everyone's first reaction is to make fun of and mock. That's what everyone does with every story. You look back on it and you're like, oh my God, this guy took a beating. The one thing that irritated me now and then were the people who thought he was in on it. I remember in 2013, that pissed me off. And I don't know, obviously now no one would ever think that, but it was just so wild that I think it's hard to say like everyone did a bad job, because that's an all-time story. I think it might be the craziest story of my entire existence doing this on the internet.
Right. Well, at the time when we spoke with people who were directly familiar with this incident, right? The people who knew what was happening because they were close to the situation. They were very, I don't know if I want to say skeptical, but they couldn't believe that someone could be fooled like Duke, this,
right?
As long as they were, right?
Now you're talking about this was in 2013,
right?
But see, again, I feel like Okay. But in 2013. Okay. Cause I'm in my head, I'm thinking, okay, FaceTime wasn't as big as it is now. No one would get away with that now because in 5 seconds it'd be FaceTime me, you know, back then. Yeah. In 2013, I guess most people had flip phones still. I don't know. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
But. Well, no, I think, but you know, going back to something we started this conversation about where I said, I could never imagine somebody could be fooled by this video that I made. And you said that, right. you had been fooled by that. Right. So, you know, in that instance, and I think in this one, occasionally people can, you know, artificially increase their own naivete, or if you want to say gullibility,
right,
because they want to believe in something that they want to believe that it's true. And so they shut off any of their, you know, critical thinking skills necessary to do that. Right. And so, you know, when you're outside that situation, you can look at it and you can say, oh, you know, that, you know, he had to have had a clue that, you know, so that, you know, he must have been in on it, because who could, right, be fooled by that for so long? And I think something I really tried to make clear in the documentary, and something I've maintained for quite a long time, I think, after years of thinking about it, is, you know, we talk about this, you know, Manti Te'o girlfriend hoax. And, you know, the hoax, to me, the hoax was not the made up girlfriend. The hoax was that the relationship, like the hoax was the nature of the relationship and how all of these details about how they met, how they spent time together and all of this were allowed to perpetuate unabated. And so I think that, to me, the villains here are the people who were around Manti Te'o at the time, who provided him with such poor advice about how to go about this. And as I said for the documentary, I said, you know, if he had simply said, no, none of these things happened, I saw them come out in the press, I didn't know what to do about it, I got caught up in the moment. He's a 21-year-old kid, right?
Right. Right.
If he had simply said, I got caught up, it went out of my control, I didn't know how to, you know, I didn't know how to stop it, so I just went along with it, everyone would have understood. And we would have moved on, right? Because that's an entirely rational thing. And I think that that is essentially what happened. But unfortunately, that isn't how they handled the situation. And so it became the focus, instead of it being on, you know, how these stories became promulgated, how they became part of the legend. And I think, unfortunately, that the documentary doesn't go into Notre Dame's role in perpetuating the myth and how it tied it into the entire Notre Dame mystique.
Right. Well, one thing it gets into is the timing of it. It comes out right before he's playing in the national championship game, right before he's got to get drafted. He doesn't know how to handle it. Like you said, 21-year-old kid. Three things I want to say quick. Number one, if you are my listeners hear any noise, I'm taping this next to a window and my neighbor's landscapers are doing their thing. So I apologize if anyone hears that. Two, I can't, after watching it, I can't knock Te'o for anything. And the theory of how did he get fooled? How could he get fooled? I was one of those people in 2013, maybe in the beginning. But when you watch the documentary, now there's a point in part two where Dr. Phil comes out and I wanted to vomit because it's Dr. Phil. He's actually necessary, because once I saw that whole thing play out, I can't blame Manti Te'o even 0.1% of any of it. Once the Dr. Phil thing plays out, you see how he got duped. And I don't know if the documentary wanted me to feel any sympathy for Naya Tuiasosopo. I didn't feel like there was even remotely a level of remorse I would have expected. It was, I found it almost a little bizarre, the lack of remorse. Have you ever had any, they say Deadspin called at one point to Tuiasosopo, and I guess they hung up on you and didn't speak to you back in 2013.
Right.
I came away with nothing but massive sympathy for Manti Te'o when it was over.
Yeah. From where I sit, and you know, we should never privilege our old thoughts or beliefs because they were rooted in where we were at that time. But I do think that, and this is true for any story where you don't have 100% of what happened.
Right.
The individuals involved in this story put themselves out as having this version of the events at the time this played out. As you saw, you had the Dr. Phil thing, and you had, you know, Manti's version of it. And it has been consistent, I think, that the individuals who were center to this story have essentially staked out what that version of those events and how they felt about it was going to be. And so, you know, the documentary brings us closer to that truth, but it doesn't bring us to 100%, because the key individuals essentially have to present what they think happened as consistent with where they put the story position in 2013. Right. And so anytime you have a story like that, you're never going to know exactly what happened, because everybody involved puts out where they are. And the story after that has to be, you know, has to have fidelity with the details that came out at the time. And so I think that it's a complicated situation. And that's also, you know what, this is a documentary that, you know, in addition to having the involvement of Jack Dickey and I, it did have their involvement, you know, in a way that, you know, we did one previously for ESPN with Don Van Atta that did not have their involvement. Right. And if, you know, it's like, is a unapproved, you know, biography more accurate than the official one? And, you know, sometimes that's true, sometimes it isn't. Yeah. And I also, you know, I weigh the veracity of every version of the events against those factors. And I weigh, you know, my memory is what it is. I'm fortunate that at the time this was happening, every single thing that went into the reporting of this story was done through text, right? We texted each other all the details. Right. We have Google Docs that, you know, we have the Google Doc where I did the reporting, and then we have the Google Doc where Jack and I collaborated on the official story, and all of those, you know, we should all be so fortunate to have these important moments in our lives documented so clearly to, you know, help guide our remembrances of those things, because Lord knows if I didn't have it, I would have, you know, a totally different version of these events. So I think that those are all, you know, as you watch a documentary like this and you think about it, particularly when you have people who were young at the time and factor in that there's, you know, no matter what people tend to tell, and this goes for me and everything I've said to you today, people tend to spin a story in a way that privileges them. And that's always going to be the case whenever anybody, you know, provides any personal narrative.
Yeah, I guess I bought everything Tao says in this document. I, you know, 3 years of anxiety and those issues and the falling in the draft. There's also a whole thing here about the NFL basically didn't want to touch him because of this controversy, which makes no sense, but I don't even, that's a whole other issue. Let me ask you this before I let you go. I had one, I don't want to say problem because it makes it sound like there was one thing I wanted more from the doc, and I don't know you and Jack at Deadspin at the time, if you had any involvement here, but the one person I wanted to hear more from, who I have questions for. I mean, I think everything got covered well with Tao and Tui Asisopo. The woman that Tui Asisopo was trying to be, it's Diane or Diana. I don't want to get it wrong. O'Meara? Diane?
Yeah, Diane, yeah.
Diane O'Meara. What did she think about all this? Because it was her photos being used. She's on screen for a second, but Jack told me that was old footage. I would have loved to have heard from her. Do you know where she is in all this? And is she just staying out of the whole story?
Yeah, I mean, I think she was you know, the whole episode of trying to get in contact with her was, you know, a modern adventure through Facebook messages and, you know, modern technology, but also, you know, ghosts that we had to dig into to try to locate her. Right. And upon reaching her and, you know, saying, hey, I've got all these pictures of, you know, somebody's purported to be this person. Can you tell me, you know, which of these pictures are you? And she writes back and says all of them. And then, you know, immediately calls me and is panicking. And I think that from the moment that I contacted her, she had a sense of what this was about, because she knew that she had gone through this whole thing with, oh, there's this cousin who's a big fan of yours. Will you take these pictures and write these, what to her were meaningless letters or numbers or symbols and things. And she just went along with it because this was a friend of hers from high school asking for a favor. And, you know, she stopped responding to my calls fairly early in the reporting process because she was reasonably freaked out about this.
Yeah.
She had actually not heard the Manti Te'o story. And so, you know, once I explained that to her, she really was, and understandably, right? That's why, you know, I generally don't refer to her by name anymore, because she's made it clear that she doesn't want to be tied to this. We didn't use her name in the original story. She did, you know, out herself. She did.
I don't want to interrupt you.
Interview, so.
It's so funny you say that, because when I watched the documentary yesterday, the first thing in my head was, I never knew that name. I never heard that name ever.
Yeah, I think we used the name Reba in the story. She did eventually, you know, come out.
Yeah.
And do, I think, one television interview, but that was it. And so, you know, I hope for her sake that she doesn't remain very, you know, tied to this, because she, you know, regardless of your opinion on any of the other characters involved in this story, she is truly an innocent victim of all of this.
Absolutely. What she did for me as a viewer is she just made me feel even stronger about Manti Te'o being a victim who deserves nothing but sympathy, only because of that one incident where it sent me this and then the picture is sent to him. And what is he supposed to think when he gets that picture?
Right. And, you know, that was, you know, that was a picture that she was able to eventually, you know, share with us.
Right.
Is one of the ways that the narrative was able to sort of be tied together by that. You know, so it's, you know, I appreciate her desire for privacy in this. One thing that I think is actually really interesting is, that I think we kind of had an assumption that once this thing came out, that Naya sort of, you know, disappeared. And, in reality, you know, just a few months after the story came out, Naya started a new Instagram and started living her life on there that way, and has been there publicly being who she is ever since. And so in that sense, I'm sort of, you know, I'm happy that two people didn't have to completely disappear from the face of the earth as a result of this, regardless of their involvement in it whatsoever. And so, you know, that's one thing I think I regret. There's a lot of things I regret about this story, but it was also, again, the time and place and the way that we, you know, the way that we did things in early 2013, at least. I think things sort of changed a little over that year, but, we didn't follow up on it the way that we could have. Mm-hmm. And part of that is because of my bias toward thinking it was a media criticism story. Like, hey, we're going to debunk all these things that were written in the New York Times and by ESPN and by the South Bend newspaper. And that's what I thought the story was. And so I didn't really follow up on it in the way that it would have been interesting to follow up by, like, a year later, seeing if Naya would talk to us.
Right. Were you surprised that Naya and Manti both did this?
No. And that's sort of, you know, where we kind of get into the oddities, and not to place a whole lot of inside baseball on this, but, you know, five years later, I guess. So, yeah, 5 years pass after Jack and I write this story. And then a producer reaches out to us and says, hey, we'd like to option your story. And so, you know, I talk it over with a bunch of people that I trust, including, I think, someone that, you know, Billy Corbin, the documentary filmmaker. Mm-hmm. And they all say, oh, yeah, you know, this looks like a good deal for you guys. And so after a couple of days, you know, we decide to sign with that production company. And then 2 days later, OK, 5 years pass. And then 2 days after we sign the option agreement, a different production company, and that was the one, you know, the Way brothers, the ones who ended up making this film, contact us and say, hey, we'd really like to option your story. And we've got the two people involved already signed up. And
then you had already agreed to the other deal?
Right.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So,
yeah,
you know, that was just a bizarre set of timing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not surprised that they were involved because, they, you know, they had a reason to be involved. Right.
Right.
And so as it turns out, it worked out fine. Like the company that we had, optioned the story to, you know, licensed it to these guys. And so it all worked out, and, everybody was very happy with the result, I think. And so that's, you know, the way that kind of develops. And so, you know, we know now, I guess, why, you know, that Manti didn't participate in the ESPN version of this, because he had signed to do the Untold version.
Right. Well, I appreciate you coming on. I thought it was a really fascinating documentary, especially for those of us in sports media. You know, I've said a couple of times, it was almost nostalgic in a way, and you don't want to use that word because that word has a positive connotation, and this ended up, like, you know, destroying Manti Te'o in some form, but it really was, you know, for someone in sports media, it was an interesting watch. I think if you're not in sports media, the story is fascinating, and I really appreciate all your insight and expertise on this. It really was interesting. So I thank you for coming on, and everyone should watch the doc.
I appreciate you watching and enjoying it. And I think it's good. I think it's good that we have these conversations after the fact to look back on the things that we did and think about how, if it happened today, how we might do it differently, and acknowledge totally different mistakes that we made and acknowledge assumptions that we had that weren't true. And yeah. I certainly had a number of them, and, you know, and to recognize those things and think about how, if a story like this came out today, how we would do it differently and how we would be more appreciative of where the individuals involved in it are coming from. And I think it's a good thing. I think we recognize that, yeah, society, especially in this country, has moved on to a better plane of existence.
Yeah. That's what I kept thinking about the whole time, was if this was today. I mean, sadly, I watch everything that way. If this was today, but thanks a lot. Follow him on Twitter, Bubba Prague. And hopefully Sean Hannity leaves you alone.
Thanks.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Joining me now, as he does every week, for the Train of Thought segment, part of the SI Media podcast, my buddy from WFAN Radio, SNY TV in New York, back on a crazy schedule. He's on mornings now this week. He's usually the overnight guy. I hate this schedule because there are like 30 times throughout the day I want to text you and I'm like, is he sleeping? Is he on the air? Where is he? I don't like it.
Yeah, well, just text me and who knows, because I don't even know where I'm going to be this week. Hey, here's the good news about this week. My alarm worked. I had no issues, luckily. I made it on time to the morning show so far. Knock on wood, we're 3 for 3. So
everyone was on my side last week, by the way, saying you can't wake up from a nap and go back to a nap. Just so right, you know.
But my only issue with that is that this is something I've done repeatedly. So I don't know why now, after years of doing overnights, why is this the one time that the alarm doesn't work or whatever? But
So speaking of texting you, we had texted Tuesday night because the Yankees were playing on Amazon Prime. And I said I refuse to watch it. I'm just not doing it. You did it on your phone, and then you had the game spoiled for you. Because you were watching the end of the Yankee game on Amazon Prime on your phone, watching the Met game on television, and the Met announcer, Gary Cohen, gave you the final score of the Yankee game 2 outs before it was over. So I'm warming up to go on another rant about streaming, which seems to be like a theme, but this one pissed me off beyond belief. Saturday afternoon, my buddy Diesel's coming over for a couple hours. Beautiful, beautiful day here in New York on Saturday. I said, let's sit in the backyard. I'll barbecue some burgers. I got the TV in the backyard. I'll throw on, there was an NFL Network game at 1 o'clock. I think it was Bears against the Chiefs. And yeah, not exactly like a must watch, but figured, you know, let's have it on in the background.
I'm sure you and Diesel, you animals, bet it several ways.
Of course. Why else would I be watching it? So I get the TV, I put the Fire Stick is in, I go to the NFL app, I go to the little box that says Bears Chiefs, I click it, and to save a lot of details, to make a long story short, now I find out I can't watch it unless I'm subscribed to some fucking thing called NFL Plus for $5 a month. Now, keep in mind this. This is the frustrating part, because I put it on Twitter, and then of course you get the idiots who don't know anything about what's the big deal? And this is the issue. I'm going to try to explain it for the dummies as clear as I can. The game was on the NFL Network. I get the NFL Network on Verizon Fios. I pay for a cable $250 a month. Part of the $250 a month I spend for cable includes the NFL Network. I should be able to watch the NFL Network anywhere I want. No. Now, I go, this can't possibly be happening, as you like to say. I said, I've got to be doing something wrong. If I pay for the NFL Network, there's got to be a way for me to watch this through the... Now I come in my house. Now, I can watch the game on the NFL Network at my house, no problem. But I said, for shits and giggles, let me check something. Now I fire up the Apple TV. Go to the Apple TV, go to the NFL app on the Apple TV. Now, unlike Amazon Fire Stick, on Apple TV, it literally said the words, you need to subscribe to NFL Plus.
Wow.
And there are people who think, there are dummies out there who think this is like great, that everything's available to you. And the point is not that everything, they go back to 1983 when nothing was available. No, no. The point is not that it's available. The point is, if you want to watch it, you've got to pay twice for everything. It's amazing that people don't realize this.
Now, wait, why is that, though? Because it doesn't make sense.
Every preseason game is on NFL Plus. And I guess if you're not watching it directly on... I was logged in with like my Verizon account on both of those things, but you cannot stream it.
Okay, so you can't stream it during the... Now, during the regular season, is that going to be an issue?
No, regular season, everything's on Fox and CBS and all that stuff.
But now, still, it's still bullshit.
Here's the cherry on top of the sundae. So now that game's over. It's now there's supposed to be another game on the NFL Network at 4 o'clock. I think it was Bills Colts. I said, hey, maybe I'll bet this since the other thing was a debacle. I'll get like go to put that on at 4 o'clock. It's blacked out in New York. They're showing me Jets Eagles from Thursday night or Friday night. I guess there's some weird, bizarre rule in New York with the local markets that you can't show the Bills. The whole thing is a complete debacle on the streaming front.
Wow. We've been complaining about this for a while, and I know we may be in the minority and people make it sounds like we're old. It's a friggin' problem, man.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say I didn't even think when we talked about the issues. You get home, you're lazy, you don't want to switch the TV input to the other thing, you want to flip back and forth. That was the issue I'm dealing with the Mets and Yankees the other night.
Right.
Then the game started to get interesting, so I'm like, let me just sign in. Luckily, I somehow found my wife's password. You know how it is. Download the friggin' thing on my phone, find the password, I get in, and then I'm watching the Met game innocently, thinking I'm having the Yankee game. Ooh, what's going to happen in the ninth inning? Down 2 runs or 3 runs to the Rays, and Gary Cohen goes, oh, the Yankees just lost again. I'm like, what the hell? I didn't even think of that aspect of it.
Here's where the delay is going to be a major issue on the Thursday night football on Amazon Prime if you're live betting, because you're going to be way behind, and I don't know what people are going to do with the live betting. So that's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to watch that. So yeah, there's my streaming. The issue is you got to pay for everything. And if you're a sports fan, at one point do you say enough?
You're not paying $5. I don't care if it's $5 or not. It's for preseason games on top of everything else. It's ridiculous.
And the problem I had Tuesday night with the Yankees on Prime was I wanted to watch the Mets because they're playing the Braves. I knew Hard Knocks was on at 10. I was trying to finish the Teo documentary. So I needed the Yankees to be on a television in... I was like, I'm not going to sit there. I'm not watching a Yankee game on my iPad. I'm just not doing it if I'm home. If I'm out, that's a different story. But I'm not doing it if I'm in my house. It's just not happening. I do want to bring up, to piggyback off the NFL preseason on Saturday, I tweeted this. There are things you see that just make you shake your head that you just can't believe it. And I don't know if other people find this as shocking as I do, but NFL Network on Saturday night, they aired 4 games. I mentioned 2. They also, at 7 o'clock, aired a Steelers-Lions game, I believe. No, excuse me. Seahawks-Steelers.
Okay.
Seahawks-Steelers, Saturday night at 7 o'clock on the NFL Network. Going head-to-head Saturday night with Yankees-Red Sox on Fox. Fox, not FS1, Fox Network. More people watched the Seahawks-Steelers game. Now, maybe you're out there, you go, well, NFL will always beat MLB. Sure. You have the first NFL preseason game where nobody plays against Yankees-Red Sox. Here's the kicker, though. Fox is in 40 million more homes. All this information, by the way, is via Anthony Krupe on Twitter. Everyone should follow him. Anthony Krupe, look him up. Fox is in 40 million more homes than the NFL Network, and more people watched a Seahawks-Steelers fake game than Yankees-Red Sox. I think a lot of that has to do with, I think with the gambling being legalized in so many states and the apps, and you do it right on your phone, I think that's adding a lot of juice to games that normally nobody would watch.
It has to be, and the other aspect is probably people trying to get intel for their fantasy drafts. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. You couldn't pay. Now, look, baseball we know is a local sport. So those numbers locally, I'm sure Yankees, Red Sox would blow away whatever preseason game is on outside of the Jets or Giants. Nationally, I kind of understand it. But the preseason football, to your point, nobody's playing. Like, I can't watch it. Games that don't mean anything, that nobody's playing. And what am I going to learn from that?
Well, and here's the thing about Yankees, Red Sox. Everyone nationally complains about they're sick of the Yankees and Red Sox. They're sick of the Yankees and Red Sox. They don't want to see it. And then every single highest rated game of the season is Yankees and Red Sox. Well, outside of the Field of Dreams game.
Yeah, give me the top matchup that you would think in a sport. I mean, who would it be right now? You want to watch Ohtani versus who? Like, what is it, Angels, Dodgers? Whatever the top matchup in baseball would be nationally, it still would get blown away, I would think.
Right. Crazy. Have you looked at NFL? I started to look at NFL over-unders. Have you started to look at them yet?
No, I'm not there yet. Although I think that this – after this weekend, I'm going to have to start to make that transition to start looking and get my mind ready for the football season, whether that's fantasy, whether it's gambling, the over-unders, all that stuff.
I thought of you this week when Shyam's Charnia tweeted the NBA Christmas Day schedule.
Yeah.
Now, as we know, the NBA Christmas Day schedule is completely irrelevant because they're going to get blown out now by three NFL games. First time ever the NFL will have three games on Christmas Day. And there's a great tweet on Wednesday by Field Yates of ESPN, who listed the schedule. Like, you have five NBA games, three NFL games, all on Christmas Day. And, you know, that for me is heaven, and I for you is hell.
It's hell. It is hell. There are 2 days a year I want free without sports that I can enjoy with my family without having to worry about a bet and over under.
What are those days?
Christmas and Christmas Eve. That's it.
Oh.
So those are the 2 days. I don't, you know, Thanksgiving, whatever. Football is a part of the deal. It's always been a part of the deal. You know, New Year's I could give a crap less about. Who cares about anything
But here's where your logic now is failing. You just said Thanksgiving football is part of the deal. NFL is now part of the deal on Christmas. This is it. There's going to be three NFL games on Christmas Day every single year, except when they play, I think, on Tuesday and Wednesday.
I hate it. It ruins it for me. Now, when it falls on Christmas Eve, that just sucks, but that's bad luck. Like, it is what it is. When a football Sunday falls on Christmas Eve. When you purposely schedule games on Christmas Day, I can't do it. I don't want to be doing it. I can't do it. I cannot watch that day the same way that the thing that drives me nuts is I can't do what I want to do. What I want to do is watch all three games the way that I would on a Sunday. I can't do that on Christmas. It's impossible.
But it's easy to watch because it's only three games. You get one in each time slot, so you don't have to flip around. You lock the TV in on one game. Dolphins, Packers, 1 o'clock. You put it on the TV. You don't have to change it the rest of the day until 4 o'clock. When you put on the Broncos and the Rams, I believe it is.
I'll have them on. Like, usually for Christmas Day, I go to my in-laws' house. If they're not sports fans, whatever. Like, we're doing other stuff. It's family stuff. You realize the NFL is trying to get me divorced. They are trying to get – it's bad enough with the 20 Sundays that I commit. I tell my wife, look, we got 2 weeks. We want to go to Montauk. You want to enjoy ourselves? Let's get it in now because football is coming, and you know what that means. And now I'm supposed to tell her, hey, Christmas Day, I'm sorry that it's our daughter's Christmas and we're going to your brother's house with the kids. I got to watch three football games. I'd be divorced.
Here's the thing. Your presentation is all wrong. You don't say I have to watch three football games. You say, hey, there's a game on at 1 o'clock. Can we just throw it on the TV? You make it like it's a little, like it's a soft thing. It's
right.
You're going into it like it's a regular Sunday with 12 games where you got the boxes going. All you got to do is be like, hey, can we just get Fox on that TV for a minute? Boom, you're locked in.
But think about what you're saying now. You're right. And I'm going to say, okay, well, can you just put the game on? I am an addict, whether it's gambling, whether it is watching the game. I can't just be like, oh, that game's on in the background. If it's on, I'm going to be into it. And my wife with the phone, put the phone down. You're not here. What do you think she's going to be saying if I'm sitting there? She's going to say, it's Christmas. We're at my brother's house. No, enough with the football. So I can't win.
And here's your answer. It may be Christmas, but it's an NFL day. Let me ask you this. I get during
What's
the day.
What's the other matchup? What do we have?
Well, that's what I was going to. Okay, you read my mind because I was going to say, okay, during the day, I get it. You got to do the bullshit, whatever, family and nonsense and this, presents and food. But that night, 8:20, Tom Brady and the Bucks against Arizona. Can you get into that? 8:20 at night. Are you still celebrating Christmas Day at 8:20? See, we do Christmas Eve, both of us. So it's that Italian thing where Christmas Eve night is a big deal. My family, by 8:20, everything on Christmas Day is shut down by 8:20.
Yes, but you're. Yeah. If I were at home, old school, yes. Even married, like we were at my house, yes. But being at the in-laws, we're probably staying over because they're in Jersey, so it turns into a whole day and night.
Yes.
So I'll be there. Now, could I have the game on? I have done it. Whatever was it last year or 2 years ago? The Vikings were playing. I was in that game.
Browns Packers was last year. Was the highest rated, second highest rated game of the season behind the Thanksgiving game.
Two years ago, it was like Saints Vikings, something. I had, of course, the losing side of it. Right. It ruined my Christmas Day. I was miserable to begin with at the in-laws' house. And so I will be able to watch it, but I can't watch it the way that I want to watch it because I'll be distracted. Now my wife will say that I'm distracted from what we should be doing because right. I'm watching the games, and I'm going to be distracted from the games because I got to deal with the family crap.
And here's the reality. The reality is you'll end up betting it, and then you'll just be checking your phone every 30 seconds. So you're going to be distracted anyway. You might as well just have it on the TV.
Goodell, I'm begging you for my marriage. Please stop scheduling these games. And it's only going to get worse.
Christmas Day now belongs to the NFL, and I love it. Oh, I love it. I can't get enough.
You got your Black Friday wish.
Four years ago, 2018, 4 years ago, I came up with that concept. I'm glad the NFL listened. Now, I had said make it a 9. See, I thought 9 a.m. is good for that Black Friday because you wake up after Thanksgiving and you feel like shit. You're miserable. The food, the day with the family, you're groggy, you don't want to go to the stores with all the other crazies who are out there on Black Friday. So I thought 9 a.m. you get the day started. But and you know why also I said it, and I got to look into this. I had said 9 a.m. for that game. I said a London game. I threw it out there, make it in London, because I know college has a bunch of games on that Black Friday. So I'm very curious. It hasn't come out yet. The information hasn't come out, but I'm very curious about what time that Black Friday game is. I don't know if it's going to be 4 in the afternoon or 8 at night.
As long as I'm with you, it should be in the morning. I think that would be perfect. It's either going to be early in the morning or late at night, and I'd be okay with it.
Well, they're not going to do it in the morning because they'd have to do it outside of the United States. So it's not going to be in the morning. As someone who covers sports media, if I had a guess, that's going to be an 8 o'clock game.
Agreed.
That would be my guess. And on Black Friday, I love that. That's great.
I'm not opposed to that, although, you know, that still could be your home, family time, Friday night. Think about it. So you're going to have football all day Thursday, a football game Friday night to watch. If you're in a college, obviously you have that all day Saturday as well, and then the NFL Sunday.
And you have college all day Black Friday, too. It's a beautiful weekend.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Check the back seat. Check the back seat.
All right, come here.
Check the back seat.
Gets in your head, right? Good. Because every year, dozens of children are forgotten in the backseat of a car by a parent or caregiver. All never thought it could happen to them. But with changes in routines, distractions, or a sleeping child, it can happen to anyone. Parked cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. So get it in your head.
Check the back seat.
A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
To wrap up quickly, I just covered the entire Manti Te'o Netflix series with Tim Burke, who was one of the Deadspin reporters who broke the story.
Yeah.
But you watch. I'm shocked you were able to squeeze it in with your schedule. What did you think?
I feel bad for him. I think at the time I was probably like, come on, dude, how could you get fooled like that? But that person took advantage of somebody who wanted to find love and all that. And it's the hard, that's not even the bad part. The bad part is that because of who he is, he will never be able to not be associated with that. And the fact that he, you know, talked about getting made fun of, and it ruined his NFL career. It harmed his life significantly. I feel horrible for
Tim. I do think though, this series, I think it will accomplish something. What you said about he's always going to be associated with it, he'll always be associated with it. But I think this series will absolutely make people have sympathy for him. Right. I wrote in my column today, I said, if you are not heartbroken for Manti Te'o after watching that, I don't think you have a heart. I don't know how. And I also think it's very easy for all of us in 2022 to say, you know, how did you get fooled in 2013? Remember, Twitter wasn't what it was. It was, you know, it wasn't this mm-hmm. thing that it is now. That person, Tui Asisopo, would not have gotten away with that for more than maybe 2 or 3 days today.
Think about the extent that they went to. Like, the part that got me was when Tay, I was like, all right, enough of this shit. Send me the picture right now with the date right. and this and that. Well, and he gets it.
Right.
Like,
right.
that is – so you could understand him being fooled. The other thing right. real quick is – and I'm glad you had Burke. The idea that mainstream media – and this has even gotten worse since then – they don't fact check at all, and they could just run with stories left and right.
But I do think, listen, Manti Te'o comes out and says, my grandmother and my girlfriend died. Manti Te'o at the time, one of the top college football players at Notre Dame, was, you know, in the running for the Heisman, all this. Who would think that's not true? Like, I get
nobody asked for a picture of him and his girlfriend together to print in the paper or to have on their, like,
Because then he's got to come out and say, we've never met.
Well, that's what I mean.
Because they never met.
That would have led to finding out, that's odd.
Well, what are you going to do, though? The guy says, my grandmother and girlfriend died in the same day. You're going to start grilling them?
I mean, if you're a news station, you're not going to just not fact check that? I don't, or even just out of like innocence, go to try to find out more about the story, find out about her and her family or details. Like, no, they just hear it and then boom. Oh my God, his girlfriend died.
I do think though that, you know, let's say with a current athlete, if a current athlete has a wife or girlfriend who's not a public figure, I don't think people are going to even today do a deep dive. I mean, I'm trying to think, you know, I don't want to use a name, but like, you know, if the quarterback on this team says, you know, well, I mean, I don't know, NFL quarterback might be a little different, but
yeah, now those things are so public anyway with social media.
And at the time, he's also a college kid, you know.
Yeah.
I don't blame him for, you know, maybe being a little naive.
But the fact that people thought he was in on it, like, that's all BS.
Well, that irritated me. I just think I'm glad he did it, and I'm glad this series is out there, because I just think he needed that for him. To hear what he went through afterwards was really just jarring, and I think this was really smart that he did this, because he laid it all out there, and I don't see how anyone could have anything but massive sympathy for him.
Yeah, and a lot of people should be apologizing to him. A lot of those news outlets and stuff like that.
That's where we see that one. Again, any story that comes out on social media, all of our first instincts is to make fun of it.
But that's not.
It's a human nature thing.
The making fun of it is, you're right. Like, everybody's going to make fun of it. But the insinuation that he would have something to do with that.
That I agree with. That bothers
me. That's the problem. From a guy who, by every account, was a great human being. Right. Like, it's not like he was some shady character and had issues.
Right. The sad thing is, if that story came out today, half this country would not believe that he had nothing to do with it, because now everything's a conspiracy theory.
Right.
And that one's the ultimate conspiracy theory. Did I hear you say when you did the morning show on FAN this week, you watched the other Woodstock documentary on Netflix?
Yeah, did you see it? Woodstock 99?
I saw the one on HBO. How is the one on Netflix? I don't know if I want to do another one, but I wanted to hear it.
I thought it was good. I wouldn't say it was great. Like, I don't think it's must watch, but you relive some of those memories, and it's just despicable how the people who ran the thing didn't give a crap about the person who went there and just right. basically let them burn the place down. Essentially, they were, the people got sick. It was, it's horrible.
It sounds like though it's not much different than the HBO one.
I did not see the, well, Ananda Lewis.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
I love Ananda Lewis, so okay. it was better. It was better for me.
Did you ever watch the ESPN thing I told you about? The oh God, I forgot the name of it. The Imposter.
Oh no, I don't think I saw that one yet.
All right, you got to watch that. You
I
need to watch
down.
That. Yeah, watch that. All right, Sal. Good All stuff. Right. Can't wait for Christmas Day. We'll see you next week.
Talk to you later.
Bye. All right. My thanks to Timothy Burke for the very, very interesting interview. Covered a lot of topics. I enjoyed it. Hope you guys did too. If you did, please leave comments on Apple and I'll read them on the pod next week. My thanks to Sal for a good Train of Thought segment. Quickly, if you missed any recent episodes of the SI Media podcast, dip into the archives. Check them out. Linda Cohen from ESPN and former WWE head writer Brian Gewirtz were on the pod last week. Alan Sepinwall from Rolling Stone giving you summer television tips 2 weeks ago. John Oran and Dave Meltzer. 3 weeks ago, Peter Schrager, also on the podcast recently as well. Go into the archives, check them out, subscribe, leave a review on Apple. We'll read it next week. Appreciate you listening. We'll see you next week. Stay safe and take care.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public, the list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.